Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name's Anna Hope, and I'm a novelist. I'm English, as you can probably tell. I've written three novels. Expectations, my third novel, which has just come out in the US. And what else can I say? I was an actress. I used to be an actress. I was an actress for about 10 years. A lot of that has actually made it. What else? I'm a mum of a four-year-old little girl. And I live in the countryside in Sussex in England, where it's raining right now.
I love it. So what inspired you to become a writer?
I've always been a reader. I've always read. I mean, my mum actually taught me to read before I could, but I don't really remember being taught to read. Which is kind of amazing. She taught me, but like I don't remember not being able to read. So I've always read voraciously. And then I studied English literature at university, and that was great. But it's not that it put me off books, but you know, it sort of I don't know. It didn't make me want to become a writer, shall we say? And then I went to drama school, and I was an actress for years, and I came out of drama school and I struggled with a lot of unemployment and I struggled with a lot of creative frustration, and people would always say to me, oh, you know, you should write your own one-woman show, or you should write your own play. And the reason I didn't attract to writing in a dramatic, I didn't feel attracted to writing for the stage, which probably should have given me a clue that I needed to change my profession. But it was during long, long periods of this creative frustration that I thought, you know what, I think I'm just going to go and do a little writing course. And I just did a little course in short story writing. And I literally had a light bulb moment in that course where I wrote this little short story and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is actually like creative agency and excitement and fulfillment, like all in the space of sort of 10 minutes of writing a kind of piece of flash fiction. And it just sort of snowballed from there. I ended up doing a master's in creative writing, write published, and then writing the novel that did get published, Wake, which got me my book deal. And I gave up acting then, and I've been writing ever since.
I love it. And so what was your journey to get your first book published? You mentioned a little bit about it, but what was the process of getting it, you know, whether you're selling it or getting an agent and whatnot?
So as in the course of my master's in creative writing, like I wrote the draft of a novel and I sent it to an agent that I really, it was a book that I loved, called The Outcast by Sadie Jones. And I don't know if people in the States would have heard of it, but it's a really wonderful book. And I was looking through the acknowledgements at the end of the book, which I think is a really good tip to anybody who's trying to find an agent. Just find, you know, a book by a writer that you love and see who's their agent, basically. And that's what I did. And I wrote to Caroline, and I was lucky that she was just building a list at the time that I wrote to her. I think that always helps, is that, you know, when an agent is, if an agent's already established and they've got lots of big clients, then, you know, it's harder to kind of get through. But if an agent's building their list, then that's a really good time. And Caroline took me on, and I wrote this book, and it was set in 1908, and it was sort of about the beginning of the women's suffrage, the suffrage movement in Britain, the suffragettes. And it almost got published. a really fabulous publisher in London, an editor, wanted to buy it, but they didn't. It didn't get through the acquisitions meeting. And so for me, I'd had a lot of rejection as an actor, and then here was this kind of thing that I was doing, like almost not in secret, but it was something that was bringing me so much pleasure, and I'd decided to kind of like try and make another career out of it, and then to get rejected at that was really, felt really, really hard actually. And I remember thinking, God, I don't know if I can carry on with this. Maybe writing just needs to be something that I don't try and sell, right? Or don't try and, you know, it just is going to be my, and I think that that's, you know, that's a very kind of wise move maybe, you know, but for whatever reason I carried on. And in fact, my husband was very sweet. I think about a month after I got my rejection, he woke me up and he brought me a cup of coffee in my favourite mug, which is my Virginia Woolf Room of One's Own penguin mug. And he said, come on, get up, you got to start writing another book. And I did, and that became Wake, which was the book that, so that was an incredible, really. I mean, it sold at auction in the UK and a preempt to Random House in the US, and it sort of changed my life, you know, having a book deal that meant that I could give up, not only give up acting, but give up doing, I mean, I was working in call centres, raising money for charities, and I was, you know, doing lots of little odd jobs, and it meant that I could really give those up and focus on writing, which was such a moment, such an amazing, transformative, life-changing moment.
That's amazing. I love your story. You know, even just going through the rejection and then still walking through and just going through it.
I had a lot of rejection. I mean, acting is based on rejection, you know, and that's really normal, and it's fine. You understand as an actor that you're going to get rejected, maybe kind of, you know, for every 20 roles you go up for, you may get one, but and that's part of the game, but it doesn't mean that cumulatively it's not really tough.
So I understand. I'm going through a period of time where there's a lot of rejection, and there's a lot of just putting yourself out there over and over and over, and just be reminded that it only takes one yes to be okay. It's just not that easy.
Exactly. And, you know, it's when you look back, if I look back now, like, it's, you know, it's part of the story and it's part of the weaving of the pattern of my life. But there were times during that where it felt absolutely brutal. You know, it felt like, how can I go on with this? You know, and I have to really give up, you know, my dreams, and you know, sometimes I think it's good to take a different path. I had to give up my dream of being an actor, you know, that wasn't the right path for me ultimately, but yeah, you're absolutely right, it just takes that one yes. And even with Wake, you know, the one that got me my book deal, I would send a draft to my agent and she would be like, it's not good enough, and then I would go back and rewrite it and send another draft. And, you know, I mean, I think having those people that you really trust, even if they're not giving you what you want to hear, mm-hmm. is so important, you know, on these paths. Like, people say, oh, you know, maybe if you did this or did that, it's really good to trust people, you know, to have a couple of people that whose opinion you trust, particularly in writing, I think.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's start with your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
So I totally see where the story leads me. The one novel that I planned was the novel that didn't get published, which was my first novel. So I'm almost sort of superstitious about not planning now. But that's not to say that I don't end up with these, like at the moment, for the book that I'm writing at the moment, I have these huge sort of like diagrams that I've got all over the wall. But they're sort of, you know, their notes, they're not a plan. If I for the first draft, I have to sit down and not know what's going to happen day after day, and it's that excitement that keeps me alive, and, you know, and I wake up and I'm so excited to go to the desk because I don't know what's going to happen. The first draft will take I don't know, like maybe a year or less, 9 months. But then after that, obviously, it's a really different process. It's all about problem solving. It's all about structure. It's all about, you know, imposing the structure or kind of refining the structure of a novel. But, and that's in drafts 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, whatever, however many more I do. But the first draft has to be free for me. It can't be planned. And I know that there are, you know, there are genre writers, so thriller writers or whatever, who really need to plan, because it's really important that, you know, the bits fit together, particularly if you've got kind of reveals and whatever. But yeah, for me, it's really important not to.
Do you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to see?
So it depends, really. I mean, through my master's in creative writing, I became part of a writers group. Mm-hmm. And we met really regularly when we all lived in London. We'd meet weekly once when the master's had finished, and we'd share work. And that was a really powerful space and really fantastic opportunity to carry on that workshop routine that we'd learn and set up in the master's. And so that would be, you know, one of us would submit work, you know, maybe up to 5,000 words, and then we'd read it and we'd meet and we would discuss the work in the round without the writer being able to kind of speak. You know, they would have to listen to how their work was received, and that was, you know, really fantastic discipline. But then I moved out of London, and that became harder to do. So it tends to be now that I will just share with my agent when I have a draft, and we work on it very closely together. She has a lot of editorial skill, mm-hmm. and so we will then work on it, you know, for maybe, you know, a good few months together. And then when she is happy that we've got it to a really good stage together, then it goes to my editor, and then a whole other round of editing will happen. And that's when, usually once the editor has given it the okay, that I might share it then with 2 or 3 other readers, mm-hmm. to get their feedback. But that would be kind of quite far down the line. So probably kind of a good couple of years into the writing process.
Okay. Let's talk about expectation. What was the source of inspiration?
I mean, my own life. It was so much drawn from the experiences I had in my 30s of, you know, around career choices, around, you know, decisions to try to become a mother, the kind of difficulties that I had in becoming a mother, and how those life events sort of made me question the ideas and the idea as a younger woman about how I thought my life was going to turn out, you know, my hopes for my life, my expectations for my life, my expectations as a feminist, you know, of the sort of life I would be leading, and the reality. I mean, in some ways, well, we can talk a little bit about that, but yeah, it was definitely drawn very much from, you know, that reaching that period in my mid 30s in my own life, and kind of coming face to face with a lot of kind of big questions, mm-hmm. about myself and about society.
Yeah, I think it explore friendships, explore motherhood, explore what we thought in our 20s we were going to be, and the reality of our 30s that is so different. And so I felt that someone who's in the mid-30s, actually now I'm in my late 30s now, it was a very poignant story, just reminding me of, like, you know, the process of what I thought I was going to be in my 20s and what my life looks like is very different. And it's just, I think that's part of the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I left university. I mean, I'll say I not left university, because I don't think I left university feeling empowered. Actually, I had quite a kind of particular experience at university, which is similar to the experience that Kate has in the book. I mean, I went to Oxford University, and it was a really fantastic place in some ways, but also a very, I found it a disempowering place in others. But But say when I was sort of, you know, 18, 19 and I was leaving school, I was just like, you know, I'm bright, I'm educated, I'm about to go to one of the best universities in the world. I've worked really, really hard. I'm a feminist, you know, I know what that means. And I'm excited to just go out and live my life. And I would say university was the first experience of disempowerment in that way, and of kind of finding that it was much harder to find my voice than I thought, or I lost my voice actually then in there in a profound way. And so, yeah, it's, I guess I was very interested in how we can feel so disempowered when, particularly I would say for my generation, I mean, I guess I'm older than you, but we're of a similar generation, you know, that in a way we were the first generation to really think that we could have it all. I mean, my mother's generation had to really, really fight for the freedoms that they won. You know, I think they were the generation that said, "Hang on a minute, this is completely unjust." And they were out on the streets, and they were in their homes, kind of, you know, gathering women together and talking about these injustices and, you know, and fighting for equal rights. And I think when I came of age in the 90s, there was a really strong sense that I'll speak for myself, you know, that I had to just kind of go out and really reap the harvest of that previous generation. And I was grateful, but it felt like a lot of the work had been done. Mm-hmm. And of course, then you realize that that's just simply not the case. And I think in a way, you know, I feel like perhaps, you know, my generation slightly took our eye off the ball and we didn't really realize that we had to keep fighting for these rights, you know, and that they, and not just rights, it's about kind of the day-to-day ways in which we feel that we can kind of disempower ourselves or are disempowered or, you know. And I say all of this and I hear myself talking and I realize with what utter privilege, you know, into what privilege I've been born and what an absolutely privileged position that I was in when I was in my late teens to think, you know, to even think that I was going to kind of go out and live that life, you know. So, I mean, I do events with younger feminists now and I'm so inspired by their kind of, you know, their intelligence and their kind of forensic kind of analyses of where we are and their sort of, you know, their sense of, you know, how crucial intersectionality is to any discussion of feminism. And, you know, these, yeah, I think it was, looking back, I think it was a really kind of wonderful time to come of age in the 90s, but it was also a kind of strangely apolitical time as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a strange time. So Let's talk about motherhood, because this book explores motherhood from different standpoints, from fertility, IVF, to just the struggle of being young, you know, a mother, a new mother, and not in finding herself, losing herself in the process. Why explore motherhood in your 30s, you know, and why that process was important to share in this book?
Yeah, so I always thought I was going to be a mother, and I you know, I'm from a big family, and I think again I was living with the assumption that I would be able to have a child when I was ready, and I wasn't ready to have a child. I didn't feel like I was ready to have a child until I was like 34, and when I started trying to have a child very quickly. Well, not very quickly, but quite soon, understood that wasn't necessarily going to be that easy for me. And in the end, it was 7 years that it took for me to become a mother, and I suffered an enormous amount of grief along the way. You know, my life really was, you know, it was a very sort of profoundly transformative period, that 7 years. And of course, many women go through similar situations. Not, I think, you know, 7 years is a particularly long time, you know, but many women go through IVF, many women go through fertility struggles. And for me, when I was going through that, and I was going through kind of, you know, multiple miscarriages, I had the sense that, like, where is the writing about this?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think there's more now than there was 5 years ago, or you know, when I started writing this book 4 years ago, but, you know, or even 10 years ago when I first started to experience it, you know, there didn't really seem to be that much. And it seems to be there's quite a sort of renaissance, because I don't know, you know, but there's a real growing body of work of women writing about, you know, miscarriage, infertility, the body in a kind of really honest and brilliant way now. But at that time, it didn't feel as though there was. And then, you know, when I became a mother, when I was 41, you know, it was like, oh God, you know, this is really difficult. It's really, really difficult. And it's really, really difficult to have a baby and have a creative life. And it's really, really difficult to have a baby and a functioning relationship with your partner. And I also felt like, well, where is the writing about this, about kind of the kind of harder sides of motherhood? And again, I think there's a lot now, but at the time it didn't really feel as though there was. You know, I was searching around for books that would speak to that, and I found some amazing ones, of course. But so yeah, I really wanted to explore sort of every aspect of motherhood, you know, the kind of wanting to become a mother, the being a mother and struggling with it, the joy of being a mother as well. Sometimes I worry that I didn't put enough of that in the book, you know, and also it was really important to me to write about mothers and daughters in the book. So, you know, Lissa's relationship with her mother, and I know her mother as Sarah, who is a painter, who really did put her creative life first, and mm-hmm. what did that mean for her daughter? So yeah, I think motherhood and creativity, and where they meet and where they conflict, and was really on my mind when I was writing.
I love that. I love the exploration of motherhood. I think for me, as someone who doesn't want to have children, it was very poignant to, as a reminder, like, you know, there's a different path for other people, and just to explore and just to see it and see the journey. And I love how each one of them was touched upon that theme in a different way. And it was really poignant just to read it.
It's interesting that you say that. I mean, it's lovely to hear that. I mean, I have, you know, one of the critiques that I've heard of the book, which you know, I'm really open to, is that it's a book that doesn't really give the perspective of women who just don't want to have children, you know, and so, yeah, I'm interested to hear from, you know, some of my friends are women that definitely don't want to have children, and you know, some have really loved the book, I think others not so much, so it's interesting to hear that from you as well.
Yeah, I love it. I think in some ways the show the motherhood was really hard, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to have this in my life, you know, which is like, that's part of it. There's joy. There's a lot of joy having a child and bringing into the world and growing and all those different things. But as someone who doesn't want to have that path, it was definitely a reminder. It's like, okay, you made the right path.
Cool. Yeah.
Let's talk about friendships, because this book touched upon a group of friends who are growing, they grow apart, there's breakups, there's the whole journey of just as long with going through motherhood, going through career changes, going through relationship changes. Friendship is a big theme. What was so important to show the three characters as friends as opposed to three strangers?
It's interesting because, I mean, it's about three friends, and things happen between those three friends, which are, you know, there's some pretty awful things that the friends do to each other. And as I've been kind of doing events and talking about the book, and you know, part of me is like, God, like, you know, my female friends are literally the joy and the treasure of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And have I written something which has, you know, actually shown three women not being particularly nice to each other? And I think, you know, in some ways, yeah, maybe I have. And does that reflect my reality? Well, in some ways, it does. I guess what I wanted to write about was the stuff that we feel but we don't feel proud of, right? So mm-hmm. it's the envy. I mean, there is no doubt that I felt deeply envious of my friends who could conceive easily. Mm-hmm. And that it was incredibly difficult to voice that. I couldn't voice that to them because I was also really happy for them that they were happy. But that kind of, you know, maelstrom of emotions was really tough. And I guess I wanted to write about that. I wanted to write about the fact that it can sometimes be really, really hard to be happy when you're struggling so much, happy for somebody else when you're struggling so much with something in your own life. And I guess, you know, I wanted the friends to sort of dramatize different aspects of that. So, you know, and also the way in which what looks, and this is kind of ever more kind of, you know, important, I think, in the Instagram era, is that what looks like success from the outside, or what looks like, you know, beauty, or what looks like whatever, you know, from the inside can feel very, very, very different. And so I wanted that, you know, the opportunity to kind of look at these women from the outside and the inside. Yeah, so hopefully we come to know them, all three of them, you know, very well by the end of the book.
Yeah, they're probably very well-versed, well-developed characters, like each one stand on its own, like it's just as a human being, as someone who I can be friends with, who can actually feel envious about their process or their journey, and who I can actually connect, and so in the same time maybe grow apart. Yeah. And I love the fact that friendships were not picture perfect. They were not like, you know, they were not this place of like, you just have your back and that's it. Like, yes, they each have each other's back, but they did horrible things to each other too, which is like, sometimes that's what life too happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And also there's a sense in which, you know, if you're going to write a novel, there has to be drama and there has to be conflict. And so perhaps, like, you know, the horrible things that they did were a little bit heightened, but I hope also kind of, you know, didn't strike the reader as kind of too, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I guess I wanted it to be true to a sort of emotional truth. Like, even if we would never do that to our friends, you know, I wanted it to strike a sort of a chord of emotional truth, whether or not it was like, it would be something that we would do. I would hope that we wouldn't.
Yeah. So what project are you working on now?
So I'm working on a novel which is set in about four different time periods in a little town. So it's set in 1969, 1909, 1775, and 2019. So it's sort of, my first two novels were historical, and obviously Expectation was contemporary, and it's so this is a sort of return to historical fiction, but with a very, very contemporary section as well. So it's super exciting and I'm loving it, but it's just, there's just so much research, and it's like,
what's gonna add? How do you do your research? Like, I'm curious. Is it the internet, library, or?
It's all three. So it's internet, library, and books. I tend to order a lot of books, and because I like to write in books. I'm a real, you know, one from marginalia. So I will get a pencil and just like write in the margins and then reread and read it, you know. So that's what I, so it helps if I have books. So I'll try and buy them secondhand. And the library, I mean, I would go to the British Library in London a lot, you know, which has a copy of every book ever. But and in fact, there's Scenes and Expectations set in the British Library in London.
But
less so now because I don't live in London. Obviously, not at all at the moment because of the kind of lockdown situation. So it's mostly just reading books on the internet.
I love it. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
My favorite genre, I guess, would be, literary fiction. But it's a close second with kind of narrative nonfiction. I mean, I love. And that's part of why I love writing historical fiction. It's because I get to read a lot of, nonfiction as well.
Who is your favorite author?
My favorite author is an American writer called Rebecca Solnit. She's American feminist writer. She's written so many extraordinary books. She's the one who wrote the essay "Men Explain Things to Me," which the term mansplaining came from.
What are your top three favorite books of all time?
So the first one, I guess, would be Rebecca Solnit. She wrote a very small book called "Hope in the Dark," which is about how people power and how activism changes the world. And it's kind of, she wrote it in the wake of the 2001, September 2001. And it was reissued kind of a few years ago. And it's just really, it's a really beautiful, beautiful book. If you're ever feeling depressed about the state of the world, it's a great one to read. And I guess my second would be, this could change like literally every day. So that's a big caveat. But today I would say a Tess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy novel. It's just the most beautiful, beautiful, it's a beautiful romance, tragic. It's about kind of a society on the cusp of change. It's got some of the most extraordinary writing about nature and love I've ever read. So that, and Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf,
which is
set on a day in June in London in 1920. That's terrible, I can't remember. She is just the most extraordinary writer, and you know, her sort of stream of consciousness narrative technique is just at its best in this book.
What has been a book you read this past year that you love?
So I've reread Joan Didion lately, American essayist, and she wrote a lot in the 1960s. I mean, she's still alive, and she's still writing, but she published a couple of collections of essays in the 1960s, which are just, I've just been rereading, and they're so incredible. The White Album and Slouching Towards Bethlehem. And they're about kind of, how do we construct narrative when narrative just seems to be falling apart all around us? And I think that that's a sort of central question of, you know, now. And it's certainly a central question of the book that I'm writing at the moment.
I love it. Tell us where we're going to find you online.
Well, I'm on Twitter, but I've been off Twitter. I'm coming back on it, but I've been off because of kind of trying to write a first draft. But yeah, I'm Anna_Hope on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you, Anna, for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends and share a review on iTunes. This is the best way to support the show. Once you join the Romance Loving community, make new friends, and get book recommendations, join our Patreon Romance Book Club. For $5 a month, you'll be part of a virtual book club, an Instagram chat, and get monthly book recommendations. Please note, I'll be donating 10% of the profit to a COVID-19 relief fund each month. To sign up, just join the link in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you love on frolic.media/podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a few days with a brand new episode. Have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.